Good evening, everybody. Hello. Welcome to Punch Kick Choke Chat. I'm one of the hosts on this show, Randy Dauphin, and I'm here with tonight Hanshi Gary Legacy and Sensei Nick Lisuino. And you're going to notice that our fourth partner in crime is not here. That's Sean Benson. And that's because he's out in La La Land. It's not a rumor that he's an actor. He actually is a very successful actor. And that's what he does to make his living. And he was out there and he's doing a TV series in a couple of months. And they found out that he was out there to do a show called The Mayans. And they said, could you go to this event? And so he asked us and we said he could go. We were nice enough to let him go since that's his job. How you doing tonight, Sensei Lisuino?
Doing great. It's been a week, as I told you before we started recording. But I'm healthy. Family's healthy. I'm on the show with you guys. All is right with the world.
Okay. Sensei Legacy, how you doing tonight?
All is good. Love that warm weather that's coming.
Yes.
Hardly wait.
So, Sensei Legacy, what's happening tomorrow?
Nothing.
If people don't know, tomorrow is Sensei Legacy's birthday, right? So make sure you annoy the hell out of him by texting him. He loves it when he gets lots of phone calls and text messages. So
you'll never be an eight, Dad.
And I will just say right now, Hanshi, I know it's turning 45. It feels traumatic, but it's actually not bad at all.
So listen, for the introduction tonight, one of the things I was thinking about, I thought about the two of you and I thought there's a commonality. One commonality is that I met you both in the same place. So I met Sensei Legacy in Alumni Hall, at Aldhouse College at the University of Western Ontario. That's where I did my first karate lessons with him. And when Sensei Legacy had Sensei Lisuino come to teach for the very first time, it was in Aldhouse College. And so my first interactions with both of you were both in Aldhouse College at the University of Western Ontario. And I don't know how that Sensei Legacy made that happen, but just a fun fact for tonight. I want to jump in. Sorry, what was that, Sensei?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle, yeah. I want to jump in with a quick question. Or a comment for the two of you. Normally at the end of the show, we thank a bunch of people, rightly so. But one of the people who just gets lumped in there is Sensei Robert Shlumsky. And He doesn't usually get a lot of light shined on him. And he does like a Herculean amount of work to make this podcast happen. Like, honestly, it probably wouldn't have never started without his technical expertise. And he does so much background work. So I wanted to just jump in and I'm going to give a couple of my first memories of him, but I wondered if you guys wanted to just each one of you share a couple of thoughts about the kind of person you feel he is, the type of martial artist you feel he is. I'm going to just say that when I started the dojo here in Kitchener and Sensei Legacy came to help me open it on literally ground zero, the very first day we did the demo, we did it in a tennis court. Robert was there. He was 5 years old and he was there with his dad. And he literally has been in my life. Like, there's never been a week that's gone by where Robert hasn't been in my life closely, very intimately. He's turned into like such a close friend. Maybe that's probably an understatement, as a close friend, like a family member. Love the guy. Super skilled. And I just want to say those things to start. And then I'm going to let you, Sensei Lisuino, what's your impressions of him after knowing him now for, I don't know, like 30 years? You've known him for 30 years too.
That's crazy. He's been ever present at Legacy events in all my experience, which has been really cool. But I've really, paid a lot more attention to Robert since we've been doing Punch Kick Choke Chat because of his contributions. In fact, I get to say hi to him on a regular basis. Gotten to know him a lot better. And there's three things about him that to me really exemplify the top Legacy black belts. One is he's really focused. When he puts his mind to something, he does it well. Two is he's nice, but he's got that hardness. If you stand across from him on the mat, look him in the eye, he doesn't back down, which is wonderful. And three, he's a fucking sniper on the karate floor. I mean, I just love watching his karate. I wish I was young, you know, and a foot taller. I'll never be as good looking as him, but I just absolutely love watching his karate. He's like, to me, you know, from my perspective, which admittedly isn't the most advanced karate perspective in the world, but nevertheless, I just love watching him do it. It's beautiful. It's effective. And he just deals, man. So that's what I got.
Thanks, Sensei. Sensei Legacy, what thoughts or comments do you want to make about Robert Chlumsky?
I still remember him as that little kid. He still has that same face. But it's like Sensei Smino says, don't let that fool you. He's lightning fast. And even worse than that, he's very intelligent. And those are the worst combinations you're going to run into, is being fast and intelligent. Yeah. And if you were playing tag, you'd be it all the time.
I remember Sensei Legacy, you saying to me early on, you know, one of the best sizes for a fighter is somebody who's around 5'11 and weighs somewhere between 160 and 180 pounds, right? And proportionately built. And I just described what Robert is. He's like 5'11", 6 feet tall, weighs like 175 pounds. And like you said, he's a deadly sniper. And for people who don't know, because we never mentioned his rank, he's a fourth Dan. And he's probably one of the youngest people in Legacy Shorter to achieve that rank. Even though he's trained for 25 years, it's because he's only 30 years old and he's been in karate for 25 years. Sensei Legacy, do you remember? I remember when he once was the final fight of a particular student that you failed at his black belt rating because he wouldn't get back on the line. Robert hit him with a sidekick and broke his ribs.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our, I think Robert's still on the call. I'm not sure that he's left yet, but that's our shining some light and love on Robert. For the people who are on the call, if you do have questions for us, shoot it into the chat tonight. You get to be part of the living history of Punch Kick Choke chat. So if you want to be on here with us, and we want you to be, and you have a question, shoot it in there. And then we'll turn your camera on. You can ask the question. You can hang out with us for a couple of minutes. But before we get into that, I see Katie Fink has joined. She's a black belt from our BC schools. And she sent in a couple of kind of questions and thoughts that I thought were really good. She sent them to me earlier in the week. And so I'm just going to kind of read this. And then I'll get some reactions. She says, I'm really curious to hear the discussion on what our senseis feel the senseis role is in motivation, in motivating the students. And she says, I know when I started, it was a blend of intrinsic and extrinsic, but I can remember hearing multiple times from my sensei, Nick McLaren, and from you, she means me. I think it was mostly Nick, not me, but essentially, you couldn't give two shits whether we trained or not. And don't try too hard. Don't try hard because you know we're watching. And she said, it really drove home that the drive for karate needed to come from within, right? That it had to come from within us. So I guess that's a question I have. I have some thoughts. I've been thinking about it for a while, but since, you know, like when it comes to you being inspirational for your students or motivational, and the work that they have to do on their own. And I know that could be different for a white belt all the way up to somebody like Dan Holland, who's like super high ranking. What do you do? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, my style is, I hope, inspirational. I see myself as a cheerleader and an analyst. I want everybody to feel like I'm their coach. I'm in their corner. I'm trying to help them get better. I care about them because I do. The longer they're around, the more I care about them, the more they become like family. And everybody has ups and downs. And I think part of my role is to keep the downs from being too down and to accelerate the ups so that people can make progress. Eventually, the long-term martial artist will always discover, as Hanshi says, will always discover karate for themselves, will always discover their martial arts motivation for themselves. And that's what keeps them there long enough to become great and it helps them become, you know, focus enough. But in the meantime, you know, I'll provide, I got a lot of energy and a lot of inspirational things to say. I'll provide that for a long time. With the understanding that eventually, right, students have to set themselves on fire.
Yeah, and that's one of my questions, or that's a thought I have, is does that enthusiasm burn out when you just get a deadbeat in the dojo, or no matter how much cheerleading you do, the fire never ignites?
If they show up and train hard, regardless of whether they're gifted, that's enough return on investment for me, because I get it in spades from people like Dan Holland, from people like Mark Altomare, from people like ZT, who's on the call, who are just so committed, who are so in love with the martial arts. That keeps me charged up. So I've got a little extra for the people that struggle. It's the people that are deadbeats, right? The people, it's not that they have to be good at martial arts, but they have to bring something. They have to bring a desire. They have to bring positive energy. They have to help others. They can't talk trash about the dojo, right? They have to show up on time. They have to help clean the mats once in a while. If they bring all that, then man, I'll just, you know, I'm there for them. I'm there until forever.
Awesome. Since Lacey, what do you think? You've had so many students over the last almost six decades. How I find both of you to be very inspirational as well. But what do you think your role is versus inspiring people to get past those points or find something and the work that they have to do on their own?
Well, motivation and getting all your confidence and everything that you get from martial arts has to come from within. I was just at a meeting with the school board in this area, and they're trying to find out how to get students from the ages of 11 to grade, say, in 5 to grade 8, how to motivate them, and they can't find enough things to do, you know, playing with the thing and everything. And they were trying to get some people to play hockey, some people to go out and play baseball. And my suggestion to them was, they're now relying on baseball to get them motivation. If a guy played baseball, would he have the same motivation? Would he get the same benefits if he went and played a full contact sport like hockey or football? And he may lose his confidence in something like that. Whereas martial arts is made to bring everything out from within. So with me as a sensei, some of the biggest mistake people make as a sensei or a student is to plant themselves under their sensei and follow him around like a baby goat. You know, the over admiration. And the best thing for you to do is get the hell out of the way and teach them that they want to run over top of you. That's how you're going to become a good student, not be the shadow of another man. So you have to be the right kind of sensei to get that out from the inside of other persons without leaving them. You know, when you leave, they have to remain strong, right? Without them falling flat on their face. If you're a good martial arts teacher and you and your student, you make your student aware of this, I think you'll end up with better students and better martial arts.
I agree with everything that both of you said. I guess a couple of points I would make would be, when I met you, Sensei Legacy, I was very, like, I found you to be a very inspirational person, both in your words and your actions. And I found that your words and your actions really lined up. You were a person that you didn't say things and then not do those things. You did those things and then explained how to do them, or said something and then showed it very clearly. And when I was a young man, when I was 18 and I saw that, that was very impressionable on me. It was also really clear that when I had insecurities about if I could do things or if I couldn't, like when I was a yellow belt and you said you by far were not the best student in the grading, but you said if I was going to pick somebody that was going to get a black belt, it would be you. I knew that that was about the work ethic. That wasn't about, that for me, that wasn't about like that I had the best punch or the, it was because I just, every class I sweat, I tried really hard. I listened to what you said and I tried to do those things. So I found you inspirational, but I think I had that I wanted to be good. So that drove me forward to try and find karate. The other thing I would say is when you always coached me different, like each class was a different coaching session, which I found to be like, I never knew what I was going to get when I came to class. I never came to class and was like, and this is the same with you too, Sensei Sweeney. I don't show up at JMAC. There's always that little bit of anxiety about, I wonder what I'm going to have to do this time, what the lesson will be or what's going to happen when I come to the dojo. But Sensei Legacy specifically, I remember you lots of times just saying, when this person does this, then you try and do that. And I would go out and fail at it so many times, but then I would come to you and say, 3 weeks later, Sensei, I still can't do it. And you'd be like, I promise you, just stick with it. And then like two more weeks, it's still not working, Sensei, just stick with it. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, like the clouds would part and it would work. Like if I stuck with it. And after 34 years, I still find that the same way. When you tell me to do something and try it and it's a struggle in the beginning, now inside of me, I'm like, it's good that this is a struggle. Like, it's good that I got to work really hard at this. I'll get it if I just follow the advice and do this. So I find you both to be extremely inspirational, very charismatic, which is another thing that we haven't really talked about, like being charismatic in front of a group of people. You're both really good at that. So that's my take on it. And I agree with both of you, but I want to follow up with another thing that Katie, sent in because I think this is good too. She said other thoughts I had, where I wondered what the value of having a charismatic leader, or is it training to be a good sensei? What is it that makes some sensei build and maintain a strong clubs and others who might be incredible martial artists, but able to pass it on? They can't pass it on. What is it about the people like Hanchi Legacy, yourself, Sensei McLaren, who are good teachers who raise strong black belts and keep those black belts? And how can people with your clubs nurture that club strength? So I guess the I don't know that that's about charisma, but it is a good question. Right. Being a good sensei, what makes one sensei, Sensei Sweeney, we talk about this before, right? Like there's two types of instructors. There's the instructors who can build a program and those who can't, right? So what is the difference do you feel between those instructors? Sensei Sweeney, what do you think it is about? Is it just charisma? Is it technique? Is it a blend of a whole bunch of stuff? What do you think it is that, how can you hold on to the black belts that you have for as long as you have?
My opinion is that it's not charisma, that you can build a dojo without charisma. You can build a big program without it necessarily. It's nice to have, and that's a whole nother topic. I would say if I had to pick the number one characteristic of a person who runs a class or a program and it grows is consistency. And I mean that in a couple different ways. One is word and deed match, as you just alluded to with Hanchi, right? That you walk the walk, you're telling the truth and you're living the truth. That's number one. Number two is consistency. You show up on time, you have some kind of structure. The students have expectations, they learn within the framework, they continue to go forward. And then I guess if I had the third component to go with that, it would be that you have to be a thought leader or an energy leader, a little bit of a cheerleader. You have to make sure you know what you're talking about. You want to teach the students at a level in general, a little bit above where they live now so that they can grow into it. Or depending on the student, right? You have somebody like Holland Sensei, way above where he is now. I don't know where that is. So just right to recap, I think you have to walk the walk, right? You have to live the life that you're telling them to live. You have to be consistent in your programming, your schedule, everything else. And third, you have to be a little ahead of them, or you have to be a thought leader of some kind, give them a framework so they can grow. And then there's 1,000 others, but those are the top three that occur to me right now.
What do you think, Seth Stacey? How do you build such a big association and hold on to so many black belts for so many decades?
I guess because really the combination would be of heart and knowledge. If you have heart and you're always got your nose to the grindstone, you're learning every day. So your students are not going to run over you, right? You have good senseis, choose your senseis wisely and then stick with them because those things are still in front of you. Even though I'm a 10th dan today, there are other 10th dans that are higher ranking than I am. And I can learn from them. So that's why these higher ranking belts need to be here, because things are changing in modern day. There are a lot more red and black belts today than there were back in the old days. And you don't need to go and look that far anymore for a great black belt. There are a lot of great ones in the US and in Canada. And your calmness sometimes overrides your, you know, your ego. And most people sometimes, you know, you get the old saying that the guys you want to be afraid of are the quiet guys. And in so many ways, so many true ways, that is true. So the key word, I believe, in all of it is that you have faith in your martial art, and that you understand your art. And that's where your teachers really come in hand. Because, you know, you know in yourself that if you make a mistake or you don't know something, you can go and get that from your teacher, and then you become a fuller person. So mainly it's just knowing your art. Going to karate for your art, not going to karate for any other reason, even the money, even though the money is necessary.
You said that, Sensei, and that's where I wanted to take it, is that, of course, like, both of you have, like very high-level skill in your arts, like, elite-level skill in karate, iaido, judo. So, of course, that's there. Two, you're both still actively training, like, all the time. Like, so it's not like anybody's, like you said, Sensei, nobody's running over the top of you, because you're still out there sharpening your sword, honing your craft, doing your work. So that's also like super cool. So people can't get to where you are because you're already gone from there. Even if it's only like one step, right? Like even if the gap closes and I try and get there, you've moved two steps or one step. So then I got to still get there. And I know for me, I'm still learning new and different things, not necessarily like a low punch or, you know, or I don't know, junto sono each, while I'm still learning those things from you, but that's not the value I think anymore, but you're both still training. I would say neither of you run a transactional based dojo. While the money is important, nobody pays you for something. They pay for a space in the room and then they train. They don't pay you. So I think that's one of the things that's really different about JMAC and Legacy Shorinru is that there's no black belt program here. You can't walk in and say, I'm going to pay you $5,000 and then you guarantee me that on this date I get a black belt. So that doesn't happen. And two, I would say, as people can see from this call, JMAC and Legacy Shorinru are very familiar. Like they're family-based clubs. They're clannish is what you would say, Sensei Legacy. Like we form this tight-knit family-type unit that has the same passion and the same drive. And that's why we all stay together. That's what I believe. And that's why some black belts are lesser and some black belts are greater when it comes to the physical capabilities. But we all have that same passion and we all have that same respect for each other. And we all see that in each other. And I think that's really like when I walk into a Legacy Shorinru class with all of our black belts, I feel like I'm at home. Like I don't. And when I go into JMAC, like I just feel like I'm walking into home. Like I can sleep there. It's just a total comfortable place that feels like family to me. And that's how I would answer Katie's question. I would say that great martial artists, great teachers who are still training, inspiring people, but your money doesn't pay for what you get. And it's a very family type feeling. So
I love that word. I love that word clan. It really throws some light on the way we live in these dojos, right? We have different parents, you know, we live in different apartments or houses, we, you know, have different ways of making a living, but we show up and we're part of this community and everybody's there together. It just reminds you, like you think back with the word clan, like many years ago, right? People live in a broad area, but they live kind of close. Someone go next door and borrow some firewood or whatever. You live in close proximity to people for your whole life. That's what happens in martial arts, right? The people that stick forever. I'm always struggling to describe that relationship. You know, I've got these people that I've been with, you know, for 20, 25, 30 years. And yeah, I'm the sensei and they're the student, but beyond that, it becomes something, not just a friendship. It's not just the sensei-student relationship. There's something else that arises, whether it's, I don't even know, you know, it's not necessarily parental because it's chosen and because it fits in a certain framework. But as members of the same clan, that may do a great job of defining it.
Well, that's sensei legacy's way of defining it. But
I love that.
That's what clans are. In the old days, were families together for survival. Right, that was the whole idea of that. Living together sort of makes it feel like a family, right?
Yeah, and then we have the extended family, like Sensei Copeland just popped on. It's like, I feel the same way about that guy as well as I do. What we're describing right now, I feel that way as well.
Yeah.
It's like attracts like, or you said it once too, Sensei Lacey, you said, you know, when you peek your head above the clouds, there's not a lot of other heads that you see above the clouds, and you recognize the ones right away when your head soars above the clouds. So I have a couple of other questions, but Mark Altamar put a comment in, which we could react to. He says, not a question, but a comment for what it's worth. When Lou Holtz was the coach of Notre Dame, he was asked how he motivated his players. He replied, I find the ones that are self-motivated and I cut the rest. I don't know that we can run a karate school like that, but I do like that. That resonates with me.
I remember one of the most famous dog sled guys up at the Iditarod, right? He figured out how to win some races because all the other guys were going for the greyhounds. They're looking for dogs and they're always looking for the fast dogs. And he said, you know, I'm not sure that's the best. He started looking for the dogs that just wouldn't quit. Like, even if they weren't the greyhounds, even if they're the most beautiful dogs or the strongest dogs, he was just like, these dogs have no quit in them. So he'd get these ragtag dogs nobody ever wanted to, you know, buy or put on their team. And he started winning the races because the dogs just, they work together well and they never quit. That's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, I'd always want to be the hardest working guy in the room, right? Like that's not, if I'm not the most powerful or the fastest, or I just want, the hardest working is a good thing to be, I think.
Just a friendly reminder for people, we'd love to have you turn on your camera. So if you have a question, pop it in the chat, raise your virtual hand, whatever it is, and we'll turn your camera on. If you're not wearing pants, that's okay. Just keep the camera pointed at your face. And we'd love to have you ask the question in person and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about other things.
So that's great. Thanks for that reminder, Setsuna. And if they don't want to, I'm fine to just keep chatting with the two of you for the whole thing and people can just listen to us talk because
this is true.
I do have a couple of other things that they've come up on the show. Like one thing that Sensei Legacy talked about that I've only started to feel maybe in the last few years. And I don't know if you feel it or not, Sensei Suino, but I'm going to just say it the way that Sensei Legacy said it, is that high rank is sometimes a burden. There's a burden of being a high rank and a responsibility that goes along with it. And I don't think, like when you're a low rank, it's like, and I don't know what a low rank is. People can decide for themselves what a low rank is, but it always reminded me of when he says it, when my mom would say to me, enjoy being a teenager. These are the best years of your life, right? So So Sensei Legacy, why don't you kick it off with explaining that responsibility or that burden of high rank and what you feel it is, or what people should be seeing? What lesson do you want to give them about that before they get there?
Well, before that, you're really, really working hard at learning. There's a lot to learn. Near the end, the lessons get fewer and far between, but they're still there. And I imagine that it was set up that way. Rank is to keep order, right? So what happens to persons that are, say, 6, 7, 8, and 8 dans? You then have to become leaders of guys who are well-versed and very knowledgeable, and sometimes even know better than you do, even though they're coming up. You have to be able to recognize to get out of their way before they do run you over. Some guys are just like that, you know what I mean? So the choices of the way how to teach and where you should be get a bit more difficult, because at that level, people have been there over 30 years and have different ideas on the same thing, and no one knows it all. So it becomes more difficult there at that time. And they sort of rely on you. And for you to be able to stand there and say, I'm a 10th Dan without being shy about it, is you have to be able to give back something to that society. Because in the old days when we dream of Matsumura and Itosu, they're gone. They're gone. It's us now. We're the ones who have to step into their footsteps. We're the ones who have to create footprints in the sand. So it becomes a different way of being the same thing, but never losing the view that you are just merely a student, even though you're a 10th Dan.
Sensei, what's your take on all that?
Yeah, high rank.
You're a very high rank. Like, what's your...
Well, you know, the rank is one thing. What I've been thinking a lot about is just your position in the organization. What's a burden sometimes is the fact that I'm thinking a lot more now, not about my own welfare. I've done fine, right? I got no regrets. But about the next generation and the generation after that and the generation after that. I'm trying to build a group now where we don't not only have a really vibrant training opportunity at JMAC, but that people know they can go on. They can become competitors if that's what they want to do. They can become martial arts historians. I'll help them if they want to open a club somewhere. You know, there's lots of things we can do together, and I want to make sure that I've got a path, you know, out of the daily teaching, and that the next generation has a path into it, and then a path into where I'm going, right, as I've tread that ground, and then so on down the line. So yeah, the last year or so, I've really been thinking about that. That's where I'm going to focus my attention the next few years, is building an organization that just allows everybody to grow, you know, in the direction they want for as long as they want. And I'm happy to be the conductor, but that is a burden, right? There's financial decisions, there's organizational decisions. Sometimes you have to make difficult calls about who gets to play in one, you know, in one field and who does not. That's the least fun part of it. Definitely a burden sometimes. But as Hachi said, you know, we're the ones making sure martial arts is vibrant, and I take that pretty seriously.
I always think about the high, like, for me, I'm now like, mistakes have consequences, like consequences that will echo beyond me living on the earth. Mistakes that I make now they'll echo beyond if I make mistakes. It's not like when I came in the dojo and I didn't block my head and I got punched in the head. Well, okay, there's a consequence there, but that's just a consequence to me. And then I dust myself off and come back in. But getting the wrong people and putting them in there, it's really like, I just want to state it. Like, it's extremely important to me, a driving force in my life, to make sure that Legacy Shorinru Karate Jitsu lives on beyond me when I'm dead. It must live on beyond me. Equally, that your style of Iaido that you learned from Yamaguchi Sensei lives on beyond me. Like that when I'm dead, somebody else has that same passion, that same drive to keep this. And they understand that when they get in that place, and fuck, if you make a mistake there, like, just like you said, Sensei Serino, like you let somebody play in the wrong field, everything is going to be fucked up after that forever. Like it's not going to be the same. Like, and I think it should be primarily passed on as is. And only that high rank, like only the sensei legacy of our association, I might have some ideas about what should change or what shouldn't change, but it's not my time to do that. Otherwise, like, I'm not ready for that. I'll screw something up. Like, which is why it's great to still have a teacher so that when you have ideas, I can come to you, sensei screener, I can come to you, sensei legacy, and say, this is what I'm thinking. And you guys can say, that's a harebrained idea. Like, that's stupid. Or, hey, that's got some legs. We should figure that out and move forward with it. But I guess what I'm saying is the burden of high rank is that your mistakes that you make will have impacts for future generations that it could be very difficult to fix.
It's funny. I'm sure I make my share of mistakes, but in the last year or so, I've made a few really hard decisions. And the folks that talk to me about them just don't understand the context, right? Like people see things just as they are right now. Oh, so-and-so can't be in advanced judo class. Why is that? But it's as you said, Randy, that has a whole set of consequences to it. It affects the experience of everybody else in that judo class. It sends a message about what the standards are. And if you keep that person on the trajectory, they're going to affect the world of judo in a certain way. Like I said, I'm far from perfect. But I try pretty hard to get those decisions right. And I don't know, when you're a yellow belt, you shouldn't be thinking about that stuff. When you're a first degree black belt, you shouldn't be thinking about that stuff. But now, after 55 years in the martial arts, I guess I get to think about that stuff now and then.
Yeah. And I'm lucky that I have teachers that I can watch as they're, I guess, still keep learning, which is great. Any more you want to add to that sense of legacy? No? Okay, well, I have more. But if at any point, since Sweden or since today, so you want to take a topic and run with it, I'm happy. Sydney Dauphin has had me thinking about unearned privilege in martial arts. And I wouldn't mind exploring that a little bit. And what she means by unearned privilege is, she says to me all the time, I just get to go places and do things that other people don't get to do. And I never earned that. It's just because I was born into this life. And I mean, she values it and she carries it forward. And I'm like, okay, well, I definitely have experienced that, this unearned privilege. Like, I don't know why Sensei Legacy liked me when I was a yellow belt. Like I remember him fighting with me once as a green belt, and black belts coming to me and saying, he's never fought with me before, And I'm like, okay, well, sorry. Like, I don't know. It's not my fault. Like, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. But if somebody has unearned, I guess the question I would have is, if somebody has unearned privilege and they recognize it, how should they use it? Like, how should they wield that? Or how should they value it? Or how should they feel about it? Or does it even exist? Maybe that's it's not a thing, right?
Well, I believe in a sense it is. It's like whenever I was around any of this, my senses, you always sort of came with me. Or I used to take my kids when they were in martial arts, but they all eventually quit. So that privilege is there only because you're a bit more, or your sensei deems you to be a bit more dedicated, or it's going to help you move along a little bit quicker or whatever, but you certainly shouldn't And the word privilege is good. You shouldn't try to make a big thing out of it or expect certain things in gradings or expect anything. You know, don't expect anything from it. You're just a student learning from the sensei.
So. I like that. I'm really proud of that. I've never asked either of you for a grading ever. Never. Not in 30 years did I ever feel I was close enough to sit down at either of your table and say, hey, you know, I think I should get graded to this level at this time. And you know, what's that?
I give you a good slap. Yeah. Even if I got one back.
I'm privileged that that's the relationship that I have. But when Sydney said it to me, that was one of the things like that I thought about. I was like, yeah, I had, when I was a purple belt, I had no business being on the floor with you and Sensei Sandoval, right? Like there's no reason at all that I should have been in that situation, right? Like other than the fact that you gave me that privilege. Anyway, Sensei Sweeno, what's percolating in your brain as we're talking about this stuff?
Well, listen, it's not 100% unearned. You know, Sydney showed up and did the stuff. Even when she was a child, she would be in charge of making sure that I had Gatorade at a seminar or that my gi was folded. She did it unfailingly with a smile. She was polite. She was on time. She worked hard. When you brought her to an event, she acted appropriately, right? It's not 100% unearned. The first chances might be unearned. You might be charming or good looking or a member of a family member, and you get a few chances that way. But in this world, in the martial arts world, at least the one we live in, you have to keep earning it after that, right? When I bring people to different places, if I go teach at Legacy Shorin Ryu and I bring some JMAC people, or if I go out to Pennsylvania, which I did a couple of weeks ago, bring some JMAC people, you know, they got to earn the right to come back. You know, if they're annoying or unhelpful or not positive or they don't work hard, they'll come back. And it's not because I don't think they're, you know, nice people, but the expectations are higher, right? The more we bring you into the inner circle, the more we expect from you. So yeah, it might be unearned briefly, but I've known Sydney a long time. She's earning it right now.
Yeah, she's smiling and sweating because she doesn't want to mess this up.
You better not mess it up.
Yeah. So who's ZT, Sensei Sweeno?
ZT. ZT is the JMAC. ZT is one of our young up-and-comers, a tiny human who is absolutely wonderful. Very quiet, and loves JMAC as much as she loves her own home. That's so who ZT is.
ZT put a question in, and I'm wondering if ZT wants to put her camera on and join us and just ask the question.
ZT, tell us on the chat if you want us to put your camera on, or you can just ask it. We can just ask it. ZT, are you paying attention?
Come on, ZT, get on the camera.
Or just turn your...
Okay, fine.
All right, you can change your mind. Go ahead.
Okay, Sid, put ZT's camera and microphone on, please.
ZT.
ZT.
You can't hide. You got to get in front of the camera.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
What's your question?
I was wondering what you guys saw of this. Is a strategy I heard from a few people, and they said that it would make your martial arts better because it would like connect your mind and body by like visualizing in your head and like practicing like multiple times, visualizing like different types of techniques and you doing them.
So ZT, not if I am paraphrasing your question right. Is it a good strategy to visualize your techniques in your martial arts to make yourself better? Is that basically what you're asking us? Okay. So who do you want to answer that question first, ZT? You have to direct this. You're in charge now for a few moments.
Hansi Legacy.
All right. Thank you. Absolutely. Randy will tell you that I tell him this all the time. Visualization, you can practice stuff in your mind. When you train your mind to do it, it'll make your body do it, right? if your brain makes your body move, your mind is your imagination, and like that. So I used to tell Randy how some of my strategy was, I would watch Wally Slocke fight, and then and I would try to watch everything that he did. And then when I went home and before I went to bed, I would imagine that I was fighting him whenever, you know, just so that I would be able to catch up to his speed, try to figure out what he's doing, etc. So I think it's a great idea to visualize everything, all inventions and everything that you have done has to go through your mind first. And then your brain will figure it out and get your body to do it. So it's absolutely important to visualize.
Who next, ZT?
You're muted. Unmute, ZT. Who's next?
You, Sweeney Sensei.
Ha! 100% visualization is important. As Hanchi said, it helps connect the body and the mind. It allows you to train when you can't train. I think your mind is always, should be better than your body. You should be able to visualize things and do things that you can't yet do physically, and eventually be able to do them physically. In fact, in my exceptional martial arts training stuff, I think one of the key steps is learning to visualize without using your body, right? I think most martial artists jump into the movements too soon. If you had nothing but time and you could train the way you wanted, I think you should watch your senseis or the people you want to look like first, and then visualize for a while before you even try it. That's hard to do in a 1-hour class. It's hard to do when you're training or trying to get a lot done quickly. But there's a power in visualizing without moving, as well as a power in visualizing with moving. They work very well together. So that is 100% good strategy. If you want to chat about it more at JMAC, just let me know.
Okay,
ZT, I guess it's me left. Do you want me to pontificate on this?
Yeah.
Okay. So since Legacy's right, I remember him right in my very early days in martial arts telling me to visualize. And another thing he often said, and I agree with it 100%, is that the smartest martial artist is the best martial artist. But also he said, great martial artists have great imaginations. They have big imaginations and they can. And I used to imagine myself fighting in battles and all kinds of different scenarios, all kinds of stuff. And I'll tell you, I still use it. Like, it's not like this has gone away after 30 years. I'm still using those visualization techniques. As an example, there's not many nights that I go to sleep where, you know, as I'm tired and drifting off, that I'm not doing a kata in my mind or a waza in my mind. But I'll tell you, I'm rarely doing it by myself. I usually doing that kata with Sensei Legacy, move for move, trying to make it almost look like a mirror image of what my sensei does, or doing the waza with Suino Sensei and Holland Sensei, trying to like make my technique visually in my brain the same way. And then, like Sensei Legacy said, lo and behold, you just kind of start to get better at it. Because if your mind can accept it, then your body goes where your mind takes it, not the other way around. Right. So I think if you're not doing it, you should do it. Yeah. What program are you in at JMAC, ZT? What are the arts you're doing?
Judo and Nihon Jiu-Jitsu.
Nice. What's one of the things that you like the most about those arts? Favorite technique? You're not allowed to say Sensei Suino or Sensei Holland. You're not allowed to say they're the favorite thing. What's one of the things you really like about it?
I really like all the fast throws and like throw lock combinations we do in judo and jiu-jitsu.
Amazing.
They're amazing. Yeah.
You don't have to tell us if you don't want to, but is there something that you struggle with in those things that you wish was better?
balance. Yeah.
So here's a challenge that I have for you. I want you to spend the next get somebody at the dojo to hold you accountable to it. Go tell them, Sensei Sueno, Holland Sensei, tell them balance on this particular technique. And then I want you to train super hard, but I want you to go home and do some visualization work for a week or two. And let's see what happens. And then you can come back on this show and tell us that it worked or it didn't work.
All right. That sounds awesome.
Keep training. How old are you, ZT?
17.
Martial arts needs you. Keep training forever. You're one of the people we were talking about. When we all die, I hope you're still teaching somewhere, that you've filled the void.
I'll try.
Please do.
You got this.
All we awesome. Can ask you to do is try. Thanks, ZT.
Bye.
Bye-bye, lady.
ZT out.
What do you like about ZT, Sensei Sueno?
Oh, man. She's just relentlessly determined. She just comes to class and works and works and works and works and works. Always pleasant. I love the fact that she likes JMAC as much as her own home. She's always there and she's hanging out there. I come up the stairs sometimes before class starts. ZT's up in the common area doing her homework, hanging out at JMAC. You know, I like to sneak into JMAC in the morning when nobody's there and look at the light that comes in through the skylights. It's one of my favorite times. And it's just cool. Like when I walk in before classes start, ZT's there. It's kind of a companionship. It's just nice to know someone else loves the place.
Awesome. Who wants to take this in a direction?
No other immediate questions at the momento?
No, the last thing when you said that, ZT said, that's true. I love it. Ha ha. That's the last thing. Do we want to talk about some of the stuff we've done?
Example.
Sorry, Sensei Legacy. Go ahead.
How about, what do you think, just for... what do you think the words, the feelings, if Matsumura came back to this day in modern time and stepped out onto the planet and looked at the martial arts, do you think he would find them more advanced, better, lacking? Noting that there's a difference between in those days you actually killed somebody on the street with it, and here people are running around with, you know, different color uniforms and just everything in hand. Just wondering what, just say he or Ritosu, Sakugawa, anybody, what do you think they would say? Or Musashi with the sword, you know, whichever.
I think those are, you just complicated the question a lot, huh? I'll jump in because my mouth is already going. Like if Kano Sensei came back and saw judo, I think he would have two answers for you. One is he'd say, oh my God, the creativity, the athleticism, you know, the competitiveness, the idea of judo being something that builds people as better citizens, all of that's amazing. And then he would say, and then there's all this other nonsense over here, people doing judo who don't have enough experience, who wear weird color uniforms, who are always fighting about which rule set we should use, blah, blah, blah. Like he would have kind of a two-part view. I think at the top end, it's wonderful. And Kano would think so. That's my opinion. But with Sashi, man, he was a stone killer. I mean, he was a loner. He was the killer. He had no time for bullshit, right? Like, what did he say? Do nothing that has no purpose. I think that's a completely different. He's not looking at people going, oh, they're really athletic. He'd be like, you know, I wrote this book. Maybe one or two guys understood what I wrote. The rest of you guys are fucking losers. I think he'd just have a really different perspective on it.
I think that's a good point, Sensei Sueno. Like, the different humans and their perspective. But I think Matsumura would be more aligned to Musashi than maybe Kano would be, because Matsumura and Musashi were both soldiers, right? Like they were military people who I don't necessarily know that, well, they found a higher purpose in martial arts. That's not, they started very practical, right? Like they want, like, I got to kill people here. Like, sorry, that's, I got to kill people. So I think where those two would have the most trouble is in the martial arts play realm, right? Like, I don't think they'd like that. Like, I don't think they'd like martial arts play. Interestingly, I've thought about even kids in martial arts, and I would really like to know, like, what was the training like for a five-year-old child in Japan when Boys Day came, right? And they were given a sword, and like, were they allowed to be playful kids, or were they forced into a life of discipline from a young age and made to do? So I don't have enough historical context to really know. I think Matsumura would like you said, Suino said, say, I think Matsumura would like some things, and other things he would just probably be flabbergasted by. Like one thing I would never say, I just would never say it to Matsumura. I would never say that I was a world champion in any form of karate. Like, I just wouldn't say that to him. Cause I've always felt like I'd get a furrowed eyebrow. Like, you know, like that would be, yeah, I was a world champion in kata, Matsumura. And he'd be like, that's not what kata's for. Like, what do you mean you're a world champion in kata? But I don't know that necessarily means it's lesser or better. Like, I like elite martial arts, I like today. I like the way it is right now. I like elite level karate and elite level kabuto. I like seeing people do kata really crisp and clean. And I wish they knew bunkai too, but sadly, a lot of them don't, but maybe they will after. Like, I think that's another thing is a lot of times with the, you know, Sensei Legacy, maybe he wouldn't like some of the younger people, but I believe Matsumura would like your karate and what you're doing with karate. And I believe that Musashi would enjoy your Iaido, Princess Suino, and what you're doing with Iaido. I truly believe that inside of myself. But I don't know, like if he saw Olympic kata, he might not like it.
I don't know. I sort of watch Olympic kata and I'm a bit awed by it. Even though I look at it as something different, like still being, while it is in a way a sport, still you could still see some of the true applications in there. And whether they would survive in facing somebody with a sword or not, they've really taken their katas and everything to a different level.
Go ahead, Sensei. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's just my opinion. I find the katas now are explosive the way they should be in a way. But then when you watch it a lot of times, it's a bit, creates a bit of an illusion of them being fast when they only really do half of the technique, you know, like they're punching, they're hitting their chest before the punch actually gets out there. So it sounds like it's twice as fast, you know, stuff like that.
But, yeah, they've gamed it a bit. Like they've gamed the system a little bit. It's interesting when I think about karate versus Iaido and it going back in time, I kind of sometimes in my mind, I feel strongly that you could go back in time and the karate would hold up. Like it would hold up. Like good karate. And I guess good Iaido would as well. Like if I'm saying good stuff, but unfortunately just so much Iaido is shit that I think if you go back, like, they get cut to pieces by like somebody like Musashi or Gonosuke, or like they just get like, you know, Udagari Ichin would just, even if they had a metal sword, they'd just pick up a stick and kill them.
That's what Musashi did for the rest of his retired life. He'd be out in the garden and then these idiots would come in with swords. His sword's trying to challenge him, right? And he was retired. he'd just brain him with a stick. He always kept the stick around him because he knew these idiots would be coming. And he killed not as many, but a few people just by cracking them on the head with a stick.
He killed over 30 people with a Boken. Over 30 people with a Boken he killed.
Yeah, but I'm not sure how many he killed in real life. I mean, with a sword either, but.
Yeah, well, he had like 70 duels.
Well, yeah.
So he killed a lot with a Boken and a lot with a metal blade. Even those idiots you're talking about, Sensei, that faced him, those idiots grew up in a military lifestyle around, there's no cops, there's no lights, there's no cell phones, there's no, like, the idiots that we're calling idiots are probably pretty hard individuals. Like, they're not like, they're no daisies. They're just not as good as Musashi.
Yeah. Well, they're idiots because they went up to try to beat him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Putting your life on the line for a little bit of a title.
That really gives you perspective, though, doesn't it? It's like probably not too many meatheads were going against Musashi, right? These are people that spend their life doing some kind of swordsmanship. Tells you how good this guy was out of the, you know, thousands of swords people in Japan at the time. Tens of thousands, right? A lot of them were just rabble rousers, right? Just, you know, throw them a uniform on them, give them a sword, they got to go out and battle. But then there's sword teachers, there's clan leaders, and he just embarrassed those guys too. I mean, he's clearly once in a, not just once in a generation, but once in a millennium type of guy.
Unassuming person too.
Yeah.
He was just a little bald, small, unassuming, deadly guy. Everybody thinks he looks like Toshiro Mifune, but he looked more like me than Toshiro Mifune. Just short little bald guy. We can cut you to pieces.
You know what's messed up, Hachi, is half the famous old Japanese guys look like you. It's crazy.
Yeah. So another question would be, when next time we go to Japan, are we going up north? Are we going to Musashi's grave?
Oh, I don't know. That's a bucket list, isn't it?
It should be, because maybe my last time. So
could happen to any of us.
Same, yeah.
Yep.
I'd love to go see his gravesite. I'd love to go. Like, there's a, you Sensei Suino went to where the duel was, right? Or you know somebody who went there?
That was Paul Martin. Paul Martin's been there. Yeah. Yep. And I have not.
He said it wasn't too impressive, right?
Well, you know, he said it's not like the dramatic stories. Like, the little bit of water that separates the mainland from the island where they fought is pretty unremarkable. But you never know. Paul is still British, right? He tells, he understates everything.
I would say that what's not understated, if anybody ever wants to go there and go to their grave of the 47 Ronin, that's a place you should go. I've been there.
That place.
It's a very somber place. And if you understand the history of that, like, I actually stuck my hands with Sensei Legacy in the well where they washed Kira's head. We weren't supposed to, but we did it anyway. Sensei Copeland, do you want to ask your question on camera?
Yes, he does.
There he is. Hey. Best looking guy on the call.
Sensei, you're muted, Sensei.
How about now?
Not so much.
We can hear you.
Thank you. Hello, my friends.
Hello.
How are you?
Can I call you my friends?
Yes. Of course you can.
Yeah. We're your friends. And also, since you're on, I want to say June 17th, we're all coming to the Windsor Open. And we're bringing lots of people.
Yes.
And Sensei Copeland, you can work us like rented mules.
I think I've heard that term before somewhere.
Yeah.
sounds like it's coming back to bite me.
Yeah.
No, my question was, have either of you gentlemen been to Mount Fuji? Because you're talking about, you know, voyage to Japan. Have you made the Mount Fuji trek?
No.
I'm going to be quick and say I saw it from a distance with Sense of Legacy. Like we could see it like way off, but that's as close as I got.
I've not climbed Mount Fuji, but I've been at a forest right at the base.
And what was it like, Sensasfino?
Well, it's really cool because, you know, you've seen Mount Fuji in the Hokusai paintings and tourist literature your whole life. And where I lived in Yokohama, I could walk like two blocks to the top of the hill and see Mount Fuji on a clear day. So it was a very big presence in my experience in Japan. So, I mean, I always had this sense of it being an amazing thing. Being in being near it was great. It's a beautiful area. There's hiking trails and lakes and small country towns. I'd go again. You know, there's a window when you can go, right? There's certain times when you want to go, certain times when you don't. And it's kind of a hustle. They kind of hustle you up and down. So I'm not sure it's an adventure to go, but it's probably a bucket list item.
What else is going on, Sensei Copeland? How's the dojo?
How about the Funken Sen? Where is the bullet train?
Shinkansen?
Shinkansen?
Shinkansen.
Well, I said it in Jamaican.
It sounded good to me.
Have you rode that?
Yes, sir.
Cool.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's fast and you have no sense of how fast you're going.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
And it stops from like 300 kilometers an hour to let people on. You don't even, you can be standing there and when it stops, you don't like rock around or anything. It just all of a sudden has stopped.
Right.
It's easy.
I don't know if when you guys were in Japan, if you drew the comparison between the crowds in the train station or compared to the crowds in the North America train station. In Japan, nobody pushes.
No.
Nobody's trying to get the next seat. The door opens, a group comes off, group goes on, and everything moves in an orderly fashion. And here, even at the airport, I mean, if you fall down, you're going to get trampled.
Yeah.
You guys noticed that, right?
That stands out in my mind. Shinagawa subway station. I would go there in the morning to have a coffee at the Starbucks. And not only do they not push and shove, Sensei Copeland, they don't even talk. All you can hear is just marching feet. And they're all in black or navy blue suits. Like almost all of them are in black and navy blue suits.
Mm-hmm. And
when I describe it to people, I tell them, imagine if you went to an NFL stadium and then it was going to get out and you had to funnel everybody through only one door. How long would you take? It'd take maybe like, I don't know, 45 minutes for that stadium to enter. Well, now times that by like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's what you watch for 3 hours, just people funneling along, marching along, and nobody walks on the wrong side. They all like stay in their groove. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Same thing at a red light. You got like 50, 60, 70 people standing on the opposite side of the street and the same. And when the lights change, you think they're going to run into each other, but they just they somehow just get through. Eh? It's crazy.
A lot could be learned from that kind of organized chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know their culture, Sensei Copeland, is more like it's not about the self. It's about the community, right? Community first, right?
And absolutely.
Sadly, here in North America, it's not community first sometimes.
Sometimes?
Trying to be put. Well, in the dojo, it's community first. We're all community.
That's why we are who we are.
Right. Yeah. Sensei Copeland, you came on because you were teaching. I know what you're doing, but you're on a little bit late. It's Sensei Legacy's birthday tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow. What is
tomorrow? Tomorrow's Thursday?
Tomorrow's Friday.
I'm always a day behind. would it be okay for us to sing happy birthday today?
No. Remember, you asked. I said no.
Absolutely. Listen, first rule of thumb. You know, do first, ask for forgiveness later. 100%. And I completely forgot that rule.
Yep. Man. Big mistake.
Totally. Uh-huh. That's fantastic. That's great.
You got to be careful. I don't know what you just put on the screen. It looked a little bit like a ball sack or something.
I know. That's why I took it away.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, happy birthday tomorrow, and all the good grains of what do you call it there? It's coming back to me. It will crown you. You will be fine.
I'm glad to hear it.
I had a brain fart there for a second. I couldn't think of the word. You know what happened? I go from my office to the back workout room, and when I get back there, I can't remember what I came back there for. And I got to walk all the way back to the front.
Yeah. You know what?
Is your birthday coming up, Sensei? Are you getting a little long in the tooth?
You know, Hansha Legacy and I, we're the older ones in this group, you know. You guys remember that, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm a young 51-year-old.
That's a baby. All right. Thank you, Dana. Gentlemen, thank you for taking my question. I don't want to take over your program. Sir. Great to see you guys, like always. And the show is going great. The website looks good. Oh, my goodness. Oh, and I did have a thought. Rick Horton, the guy from Sarasota, Florida, Goju guy, but it just didn't pop into my head in time. As a potential person that you might want to reach out to, Rick Horton.
Rick Horton, okay.
Yeah.
H-O-R-T-O-N?
Yes. He's from Sarasota, Florida. Great martial artist.
We will reach out to him. Thank you, Sensei Copeland.
No problem. I was meaning to... forward that in. All right, gentlemen, have a great night. Good to see you guys. I love you.
Thanks
all.
Thanks for coming on. We love you.
All right.
And we'll see you in a couple of episodes.
All right, sir.
Wink. What a guy, eh?
Yeah, great.
Amazing.
I was in here. I've been saying to my students that look, no matter what, whenever any of us have asked him to come, he always comes. And he never asks for anything. He just comes and does whatever. Just that whole martial arts privilege, right? Like, he never like has an expectation of something. He just comes and likes to be around it. And I can't wait for his tournament. I just can't wait to go there.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Anybody else? You're not doing anything else on June the 17th in Windsor at the university? Great Shiai, great tournament. It's a lot like ours.
So ZT just asked another question.
Ooh, well, she doesn't have to come on this time. What's her question?
Her question is, have you found that managing your dojos or training gives you a sense of inner peace?
Archie, what do you got?
Could you rephrase that? Can you say that again? Same thing.
Sure. Yeah. Have you found that managing your dojos or training gives you a sense of inner peace?
Well, while managing the dojo, I'm not very good at that. I let somebody else do it. When I am proud of myself when I do get something done, though, you know, on that end of it. But training absolutely does, because it gives you more confidence, and that confidence will give you the ability or the willing to try anything. Confidence in yourself, and then you start adding to your own intelligence and everything by doing that. So you can be more relaxed about things in life if you know that no matter what happens next, I can handle it. You don't have that nagging little worry in the back of your head all the time. That's your own little area of peace. That's why I tell people is I don't care about the gradings or my teacher patting me on the back. I just want to learn the art. I just want to be as good at it as I can be. So I know that a baby step is moving forward. An inch is moving forward. One thing a day is moving forward. And if you can't add all those up at the end of 50, 60, 70 years, and you get peace of mind.
Yeah, I would say that there's a difference between inner peace and a sense of accomplishment. At least for me, running a dojo doesn't really give me inner peace. There's too many moving parts. There's too many people to care about. I do have a sense of accomplishment when we have more members, when people do really well, when they excel in the martial arts, when we have great black belt gradings. I have a sense of accomplishment. Training gives me a sense of inner peace. It's temporary because there's always new challenges coming. A 3-hour workout is a wonderful way to calm down and focus on important things and none of the nonsense for a little while.
Yes, sir. For me, ZT, I agree with that. The most relaxed, I'm not a very relaxed person all the time. Like I can be a little more type A and a little more forward, but after I've fought it's one of the reasons I love to train if I fight for a couple of hours and I leave the dojo, I'm like, somebody cuts you off and you're like, yeah, go ahead, man. It's all good. Like I'm feeling good. Right. Like, cause you already burned all that out of you when you're in there. And I guess I don't know if this answers your question specifically, but a thought that I had when you asked it was, I think if you don't fight, do randori, stand up kumite, whatever, it's a really easy way to find Zen. Is to be in that battle fighting because you don't think about anything else. You just are reacting in the moment to everything that's happening in that moment. And I really think that Zen lives there in the fighting. It lives always in the fighting. And then you find it in other places. So thanks for that question, ZT. Sid said that we're not getting all the questions, so I apologize to people who haven't, but Stavros wants to come on quickly and ask us a question. And I know we're getting long, but we got time for Stavros to come on and ask us a question.
We do indeed.
There he is.
Stavros.
So my question that I have, I've not trained outdoors, but I know that most, if not all of you have before. And I'm wondering, in your experience, what are the benefits of training outdoors instead of being inside the dojo? And how does it change the way that training feels or the way that you do your training, if it does at all? And Hanshi, we can start with you.
Absolutely, you must train outside. One of the greatest battles was between a couple of Okinawans. Somebody might be able to help me with their names. They always fought all the time. Then it came down to seeing who was the best. So when they had their battle, the one guy won and they both agreed that it was because he trained outside. Mm. Because a little bit different.
We had a
rookie. I think we're okay.
We're okay. All right. Where was I? Yeah, and they decided it was because the other guy, I think it was Choki Motobu, I'm not sure, but it was because he had more extensive training outdoors. And that leads into different environments, open and closed environment. And I don't want to make this a long thing, but I'll tell you basically why. Imagine, have you ever run across 50 acres of land? You ever run out? Yeah. Have you ever run down the hall in your school?
Yeah.
Where the walls are just flashing by. You think you're going like 200 miles an hour, but you're going just as fast as you are in the middle of the field because things come to you differently outside. So it absolutely training outside and training inside are two different ways. And the ones who train outside, if you ask my students, all my Saturday classes in the summertime, and at least one of the two classes in the summertime when it's warm enough are outside, I train them outside.
Cool. That's really interesting. Thank you, Anshi. Since this, we know, have you done that, and what are the benefits that you've seen?
Yeah, I've trained outside. I think not as much as Hanchi or Randy have. I think it's a little harder to do well outside. I like the fresh air, but there's more input. There's more input. The ground is uneven a lot of times. You got wind, you got light. Depending on where you are, you might have people in a distance, people watching you, different sounds, animal sounds. I used to train Eido up in northern Michigan when I lived there. And in the middle, I lived in the middle of a forest with the lovely Pamela, who's on this call. And that was one of the most amazing places to train Eido, but it was isolated. So I was in my own sort of parking lot in the trees, and I could, you know, hearing birds and things. That was an amazing place to train Eido. But when I've tried to train things like judo outside, it just feels different. It's not worse. It's just different. There's more inputs. And for me, it's a little more complicated than training indoors.
Okay, thank you. And Sissy Dolphin, how about you?
Yeah, I just want to say, I believe that was Yabu Kensu in Choki Motobu who had that battle. Yeah. And it was Yabu Kensu, you're right. Yabu Kensu won in the end, they said, because he
had
wartime outside experience where he had fought and done things outside. Yes, Stavros, listen, I love training outside. I train outside all the time. I like training in the dojo because I just like the feeling in here, but I don't want to say I like training in here better than training outside. Anything I've done in the dojo, I've done it all outside. I've done it on the beach. I've done it in the middle of a forest. I've done it in a band shell, like on concrete. I've done it in a parking lot. Like, you know, Sean Benson, when he learned the Kata Kusenku Dai, was when I was out in Los Angeles with Sense of Legacy and Nick McLaren, and we were out there, and then they went driving back and I stayed for a couple of days. I taught Sensei Benson his Kusenku Dai in a parking lot in between auditions outside. Like as we were driving to different things, I just kept showing him. I love training outside. And I like that it's harder.
Yeah.
I like that it's harder to do Pinyin Shoden with flip-flops on out in the middle of a field than it is to be in a comfy spot in the dojo where you're wearing the perfect uniform and everything's tied nicely and it feels comfortable because, you know, I'm your teacher and you know what I tell you. If you get in a fight, it's not going to fucking be comfortable. Yeah. So you might as well train yourself to enjoy being uncomfortable, enjoy the suck, enjoy being outside where the ground's not level and a bird's going to come and crap on you while you're doing this stuff, right? Like that's, I love training outside.
All right, cool. That's really helpful. I've not really done any training outside yet in my training so far. So I was just thinking about that recently as the weather's getting nicer and, you know, maybe going outside to train. So that's helpful. I really appreciate that insight. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, you know, before the pandemic, Stavros, or during the pandemic, that's the only way. I remember a few times groups of us getting into a park. And I just said to everybody, stay like a football field away from each other. And they all went out. And there were a couple times where the cops even came. Like and we just stayed away from each other and we still trained together, but we were like all away from each other and we were all outside. And so nobody could come and say anything because we were allowed to be outside, but we weren't like touching each other or interacting with each other. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
Get your ass down on a Saturday morning to St. Thomas and train outside in the park.
Yes.
That's going to be in the plans for sure. That's awesome. Thank you all very much. And happy early birthday, Hanchi. Hope you have a great day tomorrow.
Thank you.
Bye, Stavros. Love that guy.
Nice guy. Yeah.
He'll be in the next grading, Sensei. You'll like what you see. You'll like when he comes to the next grading, going for his purple belt. He's
all right.
Trains hard all the time. That's a guy like everybody could take an example. He's what we were talking about before. He comes to the dojo. He's always here on time, trains his ass off. He never has once ever asked for anything. Like, can you show me another move? Can you, he just comes in quiet, diligent, trains hard, helps other people. If other people need help or he can be helpful, he just fills in and helps out. Really happy that that guy came to karate. Yeah. He's been to JMAC. Like, I don't know. He's a green belt who's been to JMAC like three or four times now.
Right? Yep.
Yeah. Love that guy. Well, senseis, we are at 9:59.
We are.
Amazing.
It's easy. I knew it would be fine. Like, it's easy for us to get through this together because we talk all the time. So I am going to, I guess the next shows that we have coming up, is it okay? Should we talk about the episode 100 now?
Yes, I think please.
We should let the cat out of the bag. So yep. The next one we're going to do is TJ Williams. Nice guy. I actually was on his podcast just a week ago. Really nice person. He's really excited because he's getting his fifth dan soon in Chuck Norris's system. And I'm not sure what that system, what they call it now, the Chuck Norris system. But he's going to get his fifth dan and he's excited to go there. And I guess when you get your fifth dan or higher, you get to go on a stage and Chuck Norris puts this black coat on you. And like, I'm excited that we're going to be chatting with him. But then episode 100 for us is coming up. And Robert corrected me the other day because it's been almost 3 years. We've been doing this now for almost 3 years, which is crazy. It's coming up on 3 years. And episode 100. And we are going to be talking with Hanchi Therrien, Hanchi Burkowski, Sensei Copeland, and our regular hosts. And we're going to have like some good topics to dig into, and you're going to want to be on that show and watch it. So that's coming up for the next two. Sensei, Steve, what do you want to say about tonight? How'd you like tonight?
Oh, it was interesting. You know, we just go off. It's just like driving down the road in the car, like what this was meant to be like, right? Just talking, not, sometimes it's not the big things we say. Sometimes it's the little ideas, you know, depending who you are. So I like that a lot. I was just thinking, though, maybe you should mention about our camp for the summertime.
I will, for sure. Okay. So, Suno, what do you want to say about tonight?
Loved it, man. It's just, this is a prime example of the idea of punch, kick, choke, chat, right? Sitting in a room talking to fellow experienced martial artists, having some younger folks listen in, eavesdrop. I just want to make sure it's clear to folks who are listening that, so next week we have TJ Williams. On May 4th, we're going to drop a pre-recorded episode. And it's May 11th, that's the 100th episode. And by the way, everybody who's listening and everybody who sees this on YouTube, we're going to hit you guys hard. We want a lot of people at that 100th episode. I know folks at JMAC, I'm going to be encouraging you to tune in. And I know that it's true at LMAF as well. So please consider that now. Scratch that off on your calendar. An hour and a half of martial arts chat on May 11th.
Yes. And so as Sensei Legacy primed me, we got other stuff going on that you should want to come to and want to attend. So we talked about Sensei Copeland's tournament June 17th. Please get to that. I'm telling you that that's the tournament that if you've never competed in it before, you're going to be safe. It's going to be fair. You're going to meet some people. It's going to be well organized and you're going to have a good time. And I hope you go to it. If you're watching this, please go to that tournament. I want to meet you there. And go to Sensei Copeland and say, I came to this tournament because I saw and heard about it on Punch, Kick, Choke Chat, right? but what Sensei Legacy was talking about is July 9th through 15th, we're finally starting up Camp Bushi again. Okay, so Camp Bushi is going to happen. We had to take the sabbatical because of COVID, but we're back. We've got to get that going, just like we got the tournaments going again. We got to get the camps going again. If you're a higher level martial artist, you should reach out to Sensei Legacy, because this year we'd like to do a bit of an adult portion of the camp at the beginning of the camp. So on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday before camp starts, if you want to come, Sensei Legacy wants to do some white crane training and even certification if you're at the appropriate level and you train appropriately. But then for the rest of the week, we're going to be doing fighting. We're going to be working on Kumite. The last time we did Kumite camp, people loved it. And I don't want to scare people, but little kids got bloody lips and they loved it. The little kids loved it. They were like, I got my first bloody lip. And they were like super excited about it, right? And you could hear them. You could hear them talking in the camp. Look at my bruise on my calf. Look, I got a huge bruise on my arm. And they were all like comparing notes and they loved it. So if you're interested in that, please reach out to us because we want you there. Reach out to me or Sensei Legacy. But for the events too, go to www.punchkickchokechat.com. We got a website there. You can see all the dates for everything. You can register for everything. And we have Rick Horton's name, but if you have people that you think we should talk to, put their name in there and then we'll get in touch with them. And now as we wrap this up, we always say our thanks, right? We say our thanks to the people who run this. Mike Russell, Andre Sedeshev, Justin Shea, Dan Holland III, Jesse Vile Vito, Alden Adair, Josh Kitchens. Tonight, Sydney Dolphin had her first night running the show. I think she did a good job. She's been helping with some of the marketing. And I want to also say just specially and specifically thanks to Robert Chlumsky. Like he should be mentioned a little bit separate than everybody because he's a co-creator in this and one of the bosses, not one of the people that's just helping us with it. He helps to drive this forward all the time. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining in tonight. And since Legacy says, Sfino, I really enjoyed this. Benson, we missed you, but you're enjoying the sunshine. So that's your problem that you weren't here tonight. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.